He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again. In anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks, but super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, live here at Fashion Furniture on this September 25th. Good to have you on this Thursday. Fantastic day for sports talk here on this wonderful afternoon. Good to be here. We're live at Fashion Furniture as we get going here. And a reminder, of course, from the friends of Fashion Furniture that it is a good reminder that when two good friends get together, create the largest display of solid wood Amish furniture. Well, nobody has more and nobody saves you more than Fashion Furniture and Lou Rodman's. It's Amish Days USA. That's right. No tariffs. Get ready for the holiday season with your family. We're talking Thanksgiving and Christmas. It's not too early. Talk about all the wonderful interior design you could create there with Amish Days USA. The combined collection of 24 Amish builders and 20,000 square feet of design from Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Indiana. It really is something to see. Amish Days USA with savings up to 50% on floor samples, 0% financing, and 48 hours delivery from Fashion Furniture and Lou Rodman's on El Paso, across from River Park. There is nothing like it. Big thanks to Fashion Furniture for being here, being on the show, allowing us to be here for the show for the next 2 hours as we take you up to Thursday night football between the Seahawks and the Cardinals tonight in Arizona. A reminder that Me and Ed's, of course, courtesy of Me and Ed's Pizza, provided for those who are here and want to enjoy the wonderful refreshments that we have here. Be sure to stop by and have some pizza for the next couple hours. It'll be here. And another big thank you to Me and Ed's. Big thanks to Tony D for tossing it to us from the previous hour. Tony D, of course, his show going from 2 to 3 p.m., the Sportsline Bulldog Hour, talking all things Bulldogs and more in the world of sports. Tony D's show normally 2 to 3 p.m. on the weekdays. You can listen to it live and on demand on the 1430ESPNFresno.com website or the ESPN Fresno app. Be sure to download it today. You can listen to his show. You can listen to my show normally 3 to 6 p.m. on the weekdays. And you'll listen to Palmetto's show, the Central Valley Sports Report, on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to noon, live from First String Sports. So thank you for listening to this show. Should be a lot of fun for the next couple of hours. Another reminder of one more sponsor we got for you here at the top of the show, and that's Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, in Roofing here, sponsoring the Lee's Air Hotline. Lee's Air Hotline, 559-320-1430, the way to reach us. 559-320-1430, the way to reach our show. Lee's Air Weather Check coming in at around 84 degrees today. Very nice temperatures for the time of year, 84, getting up to maybe a high of 85 today here in Fresno. We'll peak up a little bit Saturday, touching the 90s, and then we will get back down and maybe potentially the high 70s by next week. 78 scheduled for Monday, 79, and maybe a little precipitation as well on the horizon. So stay tuned for that. And we might climb back into maybe our normal temperatures moving forward into next Saturday. So like I said, good to be here. We got a two-hour show. Good two-hour block today. Let's go over the guest list for us. Of course, we got our student athlete of the week, who we announced yesterday on the show at the end of the show, Jason De La Cruz from Orosi Football, will be joining us here in about 10 minutes or so. His coach, Ben White, will be here as well. They're standing by, and we'll be excited to talk about some Orosi football today coming up and Jason's story. So looking forward to talking about that. Plus, we also, in this 4 o'clock hour, around 4:15, we're going to talk to professional race car driver Robbie Keneally as the Madera Harvest Classic is going on this Saturday. So we'll get you hyped up for some auto racing in the next hour. Madera's 52nd annual Harvest Classic, the Madera 150, they like to call it at a Madera Speedway, a NASCAR-sanctioned race there coming up on Saturday, like I said. We'll go over everything, including previewing tonight's Thursday Night Football. We'll get you into some big games coming up tonight, and including some baseball scores. Talking Aaron Judge here at the top as well. And the ever-changing MVP race that continues to grow along here on this end of MLB season. Checking in on Max Preps tonight. Just one football game. One football game tonight. San Joaquin Memorial taking the trip to play Central tonight. And that's the old, that's the new Central, whatever the old Central. We know Central East is the new Central, but it's the old Central. It's the different Central. I think it's Central West, I believe, is the school officially what they're called. Still the Grizzlies. It's all confusing. San Joaquin Memorial is taking them on tonight. And that is the lone Central Section football game tonight on the docket. So, should be interesting to see what will be going down there at Collegian tonight in Fresno. Checking in on some baseball scores for you here at the top of the show. Of course, the Reds, a 2-1 victory, putting pressure on the Mets today. So they win a big Neolvi Marte home run robbery that sends the Reds to a victory. He robbed a home run in the ninth inning. To keep it 2-1. Mets need a win over the Cubs to maintain a game up on the Cincinnati Reds. The Diamondbacks and the Dodgers currently 8-0 Dodgers in the ninth inning. Seems like the Dodgers are going to move closer to potentially winning that division title. A win puts them, I believe, three games up with three to play, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to check that really quickly. Here, yes, it would put them three games up with three to play, and by my standard, I think they do have the tiebreaker over the over the Padres. So surely it seems like the Dodgers are going to win the National League West with this game. The Diamondbacks would fall to still one game back of the Mets. If the Mets do lose tonight, it'll be a game back of the Reds as well. So that is the situation in the National League. American League getting crazy, as we always have seen it. The Houston Astros up 10-1 right now over the Sacramento Athletics. You can listen to the finish of that game on 790 right now. So the Astros are salvaging that game. A loss would have cemented some playoff positioning for some teams, including the Red Sox, who had a one-game magic number there. Red Sox play the Blue Jays tonight. The Guardians could sweep the Tigers and could be a one win away from winning the American League Central, which would be insane from where they sat. Last night, the Mariners winning the American League West for the first time since 2001 with their victory. Certainly maybe some seeding possibilities. The Mariners could be the top seed in the American League if things go a certain way as well down the stretch of this season. Mariners set a game back of the Blue Jays and Yankees in terms of best record in the American League. Yankees playing the Chicago White Sox tonight, looking to cap off a sweep there. So that is what is at stake in the playoff races in the Major League Baseball. The other thing at stake that I think a lot of people are going to be paying attention to here at the top, of course, we got to talk about Fresno State's own Aaron Judge here briefly right at the start. And before we get into it, though, want to bring in our producer here for the day. Jorge is over in the studio real quick, and we'll bring in Daniel here as well. But Jorge, how are we doing in the studio? How are you doing? Hope everything is going well. How's your Thursday?
It's pretty good. It's been good so far. You know, nice weather out there. It's not cold. It's not hot. Too hot. But overall, pretty good.
We're just waiting for the hammer to drop in terms of the weather, in terms of it. But good to have you here. And Jorge, you're free of the burdens of baseball. No Giants today. And you are going to a Giants game on Saturday. So at least you're not totally forgetting about the entire season here. But it is good to talk baseball. A lot of drama. Jorge, are you like locked in on the drama here down the stretch? Is it exciting for you? I feel like a lot of people are saying this is good for baseball.
Oh, it's good for baseball. Although I'm not really, you know, too much into it because my team's not in it, so I'm not in it. But I watched a few of them, and then I was watching the A's today, which we had it on in the break room, and it was kind of like, you know, a lot of things had to do with that game, and the Astros kind of like just shut it down. So
11-1 now. 11-1.
Yeah.
So, a reminder, we'll have some Giants and A's baseball left over the weekend before we say goodbye to both of those teams for the year. Daniel's sitting here as well. We'll bring him in and out of the show. Daniel, how are we doing on this Thursday?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, seeing my Yankees getting closer and closer to that top spot, that's got me excited.
Your Yankees, who play bottom feeders after bottom feeders at the tail end of the year.
Exactly.
Well, it all comes up great for you guys in terms of it. So, exciting playoff race otherwise. I'm sure everybody is are you excited about how this is all closing out for everybody?
Yeah, I'm really excited because, you know, I felt like a lot of people just wrote us off as a wild card team at the beginning of the year. But now, like, we're having, like, this last stretch where it's, like, Blue Jays are falling and, like, we're benefiting off of it. So, it's great.
We have no idea what games we will have next week. We know we will have games next week right here on 1430 for the MLB playoffs. Wild card round starts Tuesday, and so we'll have wall-to-wall coverage of that. And I think the only thing that's locked in, really feels like locked in, is Cubs and Padres. I think that's really the one I'm like, I think I'm for sure going to count that one as the one that will happen. It seems like the Dodgers are going to be locked in that third spot, and we'll play either the Mets, Reds, or Diamondbacks, whoever sits there in the final bit of it as well. So, real quick, and we'll dive into it later in the show, but just feels like this MVP race for Judge and Cal Raleigh and Aaron Judge, who we continue to just marvel at and where he's come from, especially being a former Bulldog. We feel very connected to Aaron Judge in terms of his performances, in terms of what he represents for us in the Central Valley. So I'm always going to defend the guy. You're going to defend the guy because he's a Yankee fan.
Yep.
I'm curious in Jorge's perspective because, you know, Jorge, you have I don't know if you have a dog in the race in terms of it other than from the Bulldog angle, but do you feel like it's close? Is as close as it's characterized? Last night, Judge hitting two home runs to get to 50 and 51, and then Raleigh responds with two home runs as well. It's just crazy, this MVP race that's coming down in the American League.
Yeah, Raleigh's at 60 now, right?
He is at 60 now.
Yeah, it is quite, I want to say, impressive because I don't think maybe since Maguire and Sosa.
Seven guys have only hit 60 plus, and Judge was the last one, obviously. We know that.
No, but I'm saying, like, ever since, I don't remember a race like this since that time, and it's something that only comes once in a while, and quite frankly, you know, I feel like, you know, Judge might have the upper hand to get in the MVP, but at the same time, you can't forget about what Kyle's doing.
I understand and respect the context of what Cal Raleigh is doing in terms of what he's been as a baseball player, playing the catching position, doing what he's doing, which is unprecedented stuff in terms of what he has been capable of in terms of hitting home runs, driving in runs, and running a staff that's a top five in the league. But my trump card to the Aaron Judge argument always and will always be is his coverage of the strike zone. He has the biggest strike zone in baseball, and he covers it better than anybody at batting 325 plus and every other statistic that gets him in the base. The guy draws more walks than anybody, and he has the biggest strike zone out there. It goes to show you how much pitchers fear him. And to me, I feel like it's a story versus stats argument. I like the idea of stats winning in terms of as opposed to story. We'll see where it all yields in the next few days. People can get caught up in a moment, but at least this is good for baseball because I love baseball, and this is obviously creating an interesting discussion around the nation. So Judge has my vote.
He'll always have mine no matter what.
I know he will. Yeah. I know. Jorge, who has your vote as of this moment right now?
I don't know. I don't want to say. Look.
You want to wait till Monday?
I feel like we should wait. We'll see what happens this weekend. But quite frankly, I think that Kyle Raleigh has done something that, you know, he might not do again. You know, this is once in a lifetime thing for him. You know, maybe. But it just feels like,
I don't want to turn it into, if he never does it again, it turns into the participation of, well, if Cal Raleigh, we project, will never do it again, then we feel bad he doesn't win it.
Well, it's not even that. He's up there in the numbers with Judge.
I get
it. So he's deserving of it.
But he's still astronomically far away in terms of getting on base than Judge is in terms of it. And I think that's just where it's the importance of it. But I want to save this. I want to table this argument. We'll save it maybe later in this hour. So let's dive into Judge and Raleigh a little bit later. But for now, I don't want to keep our guests waiting any longer. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we have the members from Orosi Football, Jason De La Cruz, Ben White, coach in here as well, talking Orosi Football. Can't wait to bring them on here. Stay with us. We'll be right back after the break on 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Always excited about Thursday coming because in Thursdays we get to highlight some of the best athletes in the Central Valley with our Student Athlete of the Week program, and we always get interesting nominees each week and certainly some big-time performances, and I'll point it out here, this performance from this next athlete, one of the special ones, I'm sure, in terms of his performance. Pleased to be joined by Jason De La Cruz and Ben White of Orosi Football, head coach Ben White and Jason De La Cruz. And Jason, of course, our Student Athlete of the Week this week from Orosi Football. Guys, thanks for taking the drive. Appreciate you guys coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for having us up here.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Excited to chop it up with you guys, talking about the season. And let's talk about the game first off. Jason, 15 carries, 310 yards over Farmersville, about four touchdowns to add. I don't even know if I can get to the defensive stats as well. But in terms of it, Jason, a phenomenal night of football for you. How exciting, first of all, to be a Student Athlete of the Week for ESPN Fresno, and what did it mean to you to win it there?
I mean, it's pretty exciting coming back from an injury and missing out on my whole junior season. Feels pretty good having a great start on my senior season, mm-hmm. going 3-1, and having rushing over 800 yards and like scoring 10 touchdowns now.
Yeah.
And hopefully more.
Yeah, hopefully more. Games. For sure. Coach, excited, obviously. You got the email from me earlier this week, and I don't know if you had a special aid delivering the news to Jason, or how was the interaction with letting him know he was coming on the show and being a Student Athlete of the Week?
I think I came up to him in our weightlifting class. I said, hey, buddy, we're going to Fresno on Thursday. We're going to get this you're gonna get this Athlete of the Week thing, and we're going to get on ESPN radio. So he was like, huh, what? You know? We don't get that many opportunities coming out of Orosi, so this is really special for us.
Well, it's exciting, and you guys are playing really great football. And Jason particularly, obviously, 310. I don't know what the record is for Orosi. 310's got to be close, I got to imagine. Coach, contextualize 310 yards from Jason out of the backfield.
Well, here's the special thing about that night. That was only in the first two quarters. He did not play the entire second half. We had a running clock. The coach of the other team's a good friend of mine, so I kept him out. But if it would have been a real game and it would have went four quarters, this guy would have been my first 500 or maybe 600-yard rusher in a game.
Wow.
He just wasn't stopped.
Jason, 21 yards per carry on average. What were you seeing? What was happening? How were you in the moment, in the middle of that game? What was it feeling like for you?
I mean, in the moment, I just had butterflies basically the whole game before, but obviously after the first hit, I start getting into it, and then shout out to my offensive line obviously for making those blocks for me and making them gaps if I could just make a touchdown.
Yeah, 310. Do you even know the stats in the middle of the game, or you just kind of go when you go and you stop when coach tells you? Hey,
I just keep going when I'm running, and then I just keep going. Hopefully I get more and more yards every game.
I mean, I knew he was having a big game because it was 49-18 at halftime.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, but, you know, we just had to do what was right
Certainly.
You know, sportsmanship-wise. But, yeah, he had a great game. It was unbelievable.
You mentioned butterflies before the game. I wonder where those butterflies come from, because you know what you're capable of and what you were able to do on the football field. But, Jason, where do the butterflies come from for you before games?
I don't know. The butterflies really come from just really thinking, like to myself, like I got to do pretty good this game, and hopefully I do. And then really in the moment, I just forget about everything and just act. And then that's what just I've been doing. And then pretty came out good for me.
Yeah.
Basically.
Coach, when you hear he has butterflies before a game, for a kid who maybe seems so poised in the game itself, does it surprise you a little bit? Or is that just kind of Jason's energy just trying to bubble up, and then obviously he releases it in the football?
Yeah, I mean, Jason cares. I mean, he knows how important he is for our team. It's just an important season for him, coming off of his injury, not being able to play last year. So I think it's pretty typical for a young man to have some butterflies. But like you said, once he takes that first hit, it's over. I mean, in the Reedley game, I think the first play of the game, he went 59 yards for a touchdown, broke three tackles. He's been doing this all year. He's been actually doing it since sophomore year.
Yeah.
But he had to miss a season.
Yeah, and you guys have been citing it, and I actually saw a really nice article come out in the Visalia Times as well about you, Jason. I guess it got released today, about your injury and you overcoming that, and this is a great time to talk about it, right? Because obviously I got to imagine that was a low moment for you and disappointment, but tell me, in the moment, what was that like? And then obviously when you – had to rehab from it and had to make sure it was healing the right way. How difficult was that for you?
I mean, in the moment, it was really devastating knowing that my whole season was just cut short over an injury that just happened against my own team, especially my own teammates. I'm actually friends with them. And then just physical therapy, really, it wasn't really as hard as on me, because I really had a lot of support from my family, my mom, my dad, and honestly, just doing everything my physical therapist told me and really doing stretches every day, trying to just make sure that I came back stronger.
And Jason, it was a broken leg, right?
Yeah, I broke both my fibula and tibula.
Wow. So just kind of a clean break there. And Coach, it's hard probably to revisit that moment for you, because it was an inter-squad game. You're just trying to get your team ready. And take me through that as a coach when obviously the intention is to get the team ready, and then it happens to Jason there.
I mean, it was devastating. I mean, I remember the play. It was a 27 power. It's like one of our basic plays. And some guys kind of grabbed him from behind, and he fell awkwardly. And we knew it was over right away. We had to call 911, get the ambulance. I remember going to the hospital and visiting him and his mom. Luckily, he got great care, because he got surgery, I think, the next day, or was it that day?
Yeah, the next day.
Yeah, the next day. He didn't have to wait around, which was nice. So he got that going quickly. But it was devastating. It devastated our team, because as you can see how important he is to us right now. And it hurt us last year a lot. But, you know, he fought back, and now he's doing great things.
Yeah, and obviously that year, your junior year, You had to be involved in different ways in the game. Obviously, you probably had a cast on and everything like that. But in helping your team off the field, how were you around the team that whole season? And tell me a little bit about maybe the way you just stayed involved in that way.
The way I stayed involved was really being the cameraman.
Yeah, he was our cameraman.
Okay. I was on top, just recording, getting all the highlights for my other players.
So good camera work. For sure.
Yeah. He actually was a good cameraman.
Yeah. But him helping out in that, and maybe is there something from the angle you were watching from the camera side? You're like, I'm seeing angles. I'm seeing some stuff here that I can do when I'm back on the field for my senior year.
I actually had a lot of thoughts about that. I was just like, I would just be watching the game. I'd be like, damn, I could have done something probably better. But
yeah,
sadly, I wasn't in the game.
Do you think, Coach, that helped him a little bit, having that sky perspective a little bit?
Yeah, I'm sure it did help him. And then also when he was a sophomore, he played behind one of our guys, Andrew Camarillo, who was an All-State running back. So he got to watch a great player that he backed up. But, yeah, I mean, Jason always stayed around. Like, I made him be part of the team. I didn't just let him go home and not do anything. He was always with us, and he was always with me in the weight room. And, yeah, he's been with me all these years. I brought him up freshman year for the playoffs. I gave him some carries in our playoff game when he was a freshman just to start letting him know that once you get to varsity, you're going to be able to do great things.
Yeah. So you when did you start knowing about Jason as a player?
His freshman year,
yeah,
when he was on JV. I'm okay. Like, okay, this guy's special.
Yeah.
But we had a great running back, so I didn't need him right away. But when the playoffs came around, when their season was done, I brought him up and started breaking him in.
What was it from what you saw? Was it like
he has great vision?
Yeah.
He can see the holes develop and he can burst through it. And he's a slashing running back with his. He's got a long, lean frame. He's not your typical running back. I told him driving up here, I mean, the colleges are going to probably want to turn you into a receiver or something. But, but for us, he's a running back, and that's what he has. He's got vision, and he's a great slashing running back.
Yeah.
And he has the ability to break tackles.
Yeah. I think about the taller back kind of look to it, right? Guys who are a little bit taller. You can do a lot with where your leg position is, your feet position. You could make some guys miss a certain way. Is that how you kind of see it, Jason, when you attack and the way you play running back is like, okay, I like the frame I have because it's a little harder for people to wrap up my legs.
Yeah, especially I'm like a little skinny, so like I just start like moving a little bit and their hands just slide right off and then I just keep running.
Keep the knees high, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Especially with my long legs, I could run pretty far and fast, too.
Yeah, certainly. So how tall were you in your freshman year?
Honestly, I don't remember.
Yeah. He was probably about 5'8", maybe. He was still a little taller than the other guys, but he was like 5'8".
Yeah. You've grown. You're up to 6 foot now, right?
Yep.
Do you feel like you got a few more inches in you? Or?
I mean, I don't know yet. Probably still keep growing.
Yeah, when he came back from the summer, I looked at him like, wait, now you're taller than me because I'm like 5'11 and a half. And we measured ourselves together.
Yeah.
He is definitely taller than me now.
That's awesome. Like you said, you're off to a fantastic start to the year. And we pointed out the Farmersville game. But let's talk about some of the games this season for you guys. Off and running. You've started three games on the road here to start the year. And they're finally getting into league play tomorrow. But I want to talk about the opening two road games you had. Madera South, a big team that you guys beat pretty handily, a 32-point victory there. I want to talk about the Reedley game because Reedley came in a little hot with their play and their ability to play in the offensive side. You guys shut them down for 6 points. That quarterback's fantastic. What he did against Sunnyside, I think, was the week before.
Yeah.
We actually had him on this show.
Yeah.
So tell me about the Reedley game because – Jason, you play defense too, right?
Yeah.
On the side.
Corner.
So what was effective for the team in that game that you were able to shut down that Reedley Pirate team?
Go ahead, Jason.
I
mean, I know what we did. we saw the film the week before, and, yeah, the guy had, like, I think 242 yards rushing as quarterback, you know.
Yeah.
And then they'd put him at receiver and throw him the ball, and he'd bust those too. So
right.
We basically double spied him. We had two guys on him. One of our middle linebackers was on him and our free safety was on him.
Yeah.
And we shut him down.
Two spy.
We had double spy on him.
Wow.
Yeah. And we manned up everywhere else.
Yeah.
And they didn't adjust.
And sometimes it's that those things before keeping in the faith in that because it's like, well, coach, we got so many other things we got to pay attention to, right, as a player on defense. But the trust in coach to have that game plan. Tell me about that, Jason, a little bit on the football field.
Well, of course, the game plan, well, obviously my coach White and Coach Toddy, our defensive coordinator, they just really made sure that we understood our assignments and obviously that really paid off. Against Reedley because we shut them down. Obviously, communicating and playing as a team really helped. And we stopped them. We stopped especially Will Bacon from getting any yards. That was really a big accomplishment.
That was our number one goal. That was it. That was our number one goal coming in.
So a great win there out of league play. You play Emmanuel. Emmanuel's having a fantastic year. And you guys obviously bouncing back from that with this Farmersville game. And now this league's interesting, right? You guys have a lot more teams in the league, and the league plays a little bit longer than other teams we talk to in terms of it. So you guys are already in the games that really matter when it comes to winning a league title. So take me through just the 2-1 non-league play, and how would you assess this team has kind of played from that in the big picture of what you guys hope to accomplish moving into potentially the postseason?
I mean, we got a nice preseason schedule because we played quality opponents. I mean, all the teams we played were bigger than, you know, bigger schools than we were, except for Emmanuel, but it's a private school. And they are really good this year. I mean, their offensive and defensive line averages like 300 pounds. They got two middle linebackers that are like 6'2", 225. I mean, they're legit. So, but it was good. It was actually a good game because against them, it was only 16-9 in the middle of the third quarter. Mm-hmm. We were fighting. It was only 9-0 at halftime.
Yeah.
And they had been blowing everybody out. But then we threw a critical pick six.
Yeah,
and then they scored another one, and that was pretty much the end of that game. But we fought hard for about 3.5 quarters against them. So we're ready for league play because we're not going to see anybody with the physicality of Emmanuel. And we probably won't see anybody as athletic as a Will Bacon either. I mean, there's a few good quarterbacks in the league that might be able to duplicate what he does.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we played a really tough preseason, so I think we're ready for league.
And we mentioned this league, and, Coach, you mentioned the history of it. A lot of state titles come out of this league, particularly from the Central Section.
Yeah.
You mentioned Strathmore before we came on. Lindsay was in a state game before that as well.
Yeah.
Woodlake's been really good this year.
Yeah.
And so the level of talent and the caliber of this league, there's not really a rest week, per se, from league play. Just tell me the characteristics of this league for people who may not are familiar with what you guys go through.
Well, it's a tough league. I mean, from bottom to top, they're all good teams. They're all very well coached. I mean, the Strathmore coach, Jeremy Blackwell, has been the California Coach of the Year before. I mean, he's got two state titles. So, I mean, you're talking one of the best coaches in California. You've got Corcoran is very well coached. They get a lot of big guys. You got Woodlake, very well coached, lots of good athletes. You got Lindsay going to the state playoff game. They were like our third or fourth place team last year.
Yeah.
And they went all the way to state. Where do you know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, there's quality football every week in our league.
Jason, do you feel that as well week to week? Or like, man, there's not really a break every time. We play a quality opponent. An opponent's going to test us. An opponent that's going to give us some problems. Do you invite that kind of challenge as a player every time you go play on Friday night?
Actually, I do, because the tougher the team, it's like really makes the game more fun, makes it more exciting, like to like just be able to like fight for the win, and like being like a back-to-back game, that's even more exciting, especially because it just makes it more like just a more exciting game and like just more entertaining.
So playing this week, obviously you come off a win and now you're facing Lindsay, and you mentioned Lindsay making a run last year, and I know Lindsay's record says 0-4, but they really gave Woodlake everything they could handle last week. We know Woodlake's got a pretty decent team so far this season. So what stands out about this game between Lindsay and you guys, and is it looking in the mirror with the Cardinals versus Cardinals kind of side of it? What is it like these games every time Lindsay and Orosi play?
Well, I mean, this game is big. They beat us last year. They made it really far. Our guys know how far they went, so of course we want to get a little bit of revenge on them. But it's going to be a hard game. Yeah, they might be 0-4, but they played some really good teams. They played Morro Bay, who's a good team. They played Exeter. Okay, they played Woodlake. I don't know who they played their first game, but
I can find it for you if while you talk.
So, you know, and they're not getting blown out, and they've got some really good athletes. They've got a lot of their good athletes that were on that championship team that they had last year. So we by no ways are taking these guys lightly. We know they're good, and they're going to be hungry. They haven't won yet. It's going to be a very hard-fought game.
Yeah, they were at Arvin to start the year.
Okay, Arvin, and Arvin had a good run last year too.
Yeah. Yeah, so tight battles throughout for Lindsay. So they are dying for a win. But, of course, you guys are playing at home, and you want to give something to the home crowd. You're looking for your first home win of the year, too. So I know that's a big one
for you. And I'm going for my 200th career win as a coach.
Oh, there you go.
And we're having a whiteout, Coach Whiteout. So hopefully we can do it. If not, it's going to be a little embarrassing for me. I'll have to go tell my mom I couldn't do it. During the whiteout, Mom. Sorry.
Jason, they're pressure to win for Coach White 200. That's going to be an awesome opportunity for you guys tomorrow night.
It is a big opportunity, but really not too much pressure because I know where we're about, and I'm pretty I'm positive in our plays and how we'll do.
Yeah, certainly. Jason, was football always your first? Like, when did you start playing?
I started playing Pop Warner on Pee Wees. I played Pop Warner for about 4 years. I missed my first senior Pop Warner year because of COVID.
Yeah.
And I came back. And after that, it was just high school football.
Absolutely. Is there a hope for you, a dream for you, obviously, to play at the next level? Coach mentioned it, your frame, maybe something a lot of coaches are going to be looking at, maybe a Reedley, a COS, or where are you kind of thinking about? For?
I mean, I'm not really thinking about anywhere specific, really, if the opportunity, like, arises or, like, comes to me. If I get an opportunity for any college, I'll consider going.
We're going to start getting his name. We talked about this. We're going to start getting him out there because he deserves some looks.
Yeah. What would colleges be getting from Jason De La Cruz for next season if they take a look at him?
They'd be getting a very versatile player. He could play DB. He could play receiver. He could play running back. He could do a lot of things for a team. They could plug him in, plug and play with him, whatever they want him to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, all right, we got a lot of things to give you here, Jason. So bear with me here. I'm gonna start here with our first big prize here. This is just a fun little giant check we make for you here.
Nice.
So this got the Erosi logo on it. We got your full name there. We got coach over there. We got athletic director on
all
it.
All right.
So this is for all you to take right. home. I don't know where you'll put it, but you got a place.
On top of my wall.
Top of the wall, right there. So this is for you to take home.
Thank
so
you.
So there you go. We'll give you that. Let's see if Daniel can help me out. Do we have that bag that I gave you over there? We got a nice little swag bag here. So if you don't mind pulling out some of the items in here. First of all, that bag's for you from Decent Duker. This is a T-shirt. I hope it's the right size. I got you a large. I think kind of thought.
Yeah, this will fit me.
Yeah, I thought 6 foot.
Yeah,
that'll work for you. So there you go.
Appreciate it.
There's some other items in there, courtesy of some other great sponsors of ours. Let's see what we got here. Yeah, how about Fresno State football
tickets
for next week against Nevada? We got a KFC sandwich there that works in the place. How about Toledo's? When you come up to the Fresno State game, you can get a family four-pack dinner, Toledo's Mexican restaurant here in town.
Nice.
So they got a nice little certificate for you.
Thank you.
And lastly, Daniel, do you mind if you can help me out here? There is a cooler, like I said, that you guys saw that was brought in, the mystery cooler here. This is courtesy of Raw Farms in Fresno. Daniel, if you don't mind, turn around and let's see if we can open it up for him. In there, we have some Raw Farm product, which is raw milk. You're a big milk drinker, Jason. That is for you to take home. You mix it in some protein shakes, all that great stuff that you do. And this is for Coach. There's a paper at the top of the igloo if you close the lid there. And, Coach, you'll take that paper. There's a number on that business card. You contact them, and they're going to do a team drop of milk at your next practice whenever you want.
Oh, nice.
So they'll provide a lot of product for the guys and your whole team. You just coordinate with them, and you guys will have some raw milk product coming your way.
Appreciate it.
To a Rossi practice, a little team drop for
you guys.
Keep
my guys' bones strong.
Exactly. No more breaking bones.
No more
here.
Broken legs.
So that's all thanks to our great sponsors from our Student Athlete of the Week campaign and all for you guys. So enjoy. That's going to be fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. So, Jason, you're smiling ear to ear. I love it. Yeah. Anyways, all right. Wish you guys luck. And by the way, one last thing. Student Athlete of the Year, we have a banquet at the end of the school year. We have a Student Athlete of the Year banquet, which you guys will get an invitation out sooner or later. It's going to be like June-ish, right at the end of the school year. So we did a banquet last year here in Fresno. All of our Student Athletes of the Week automatically become eligible for Student Athlete of the Year, where the winner will win a $1,500 scholarship and iPad as well. So you'll be in the running for that for our campaign and a celebration of all the great athletes that have been in our Student Athlete of the Week campaign. So appreciate it, Jason, and congratulations once again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Coach, thanks for coming on the show.
Appreciate
Jason,
it. Thank you.
Good luck. Stay healthy. And we will see Maybe talking down the road if Orosi's making a big run down the stretch.
Hopefully.
Guys, thanks again for coming on the show.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Behind the Bench right after this on 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Big thanks to Jason De La Cruz and Ben White, Coach Ben White from Orosi Football, for coming on the show today. Student Athlete of the Week, a reminder that you can nominate your student athlete for our Student Athlete of the Week campaign by going to our website, 1430ESPNFresno.com. That is the way to reach that program. If you nominate them, you could see your student-athlete in your life on our show. And I'm telling you, the prize packs just get bigger and bigger as we go. So get your athlete nominated today in terms of that. So big thanks to them. So like I said, let's go over some high school scores from around the region. Of course, tonight, San Joaquin Memorial and Central East tonight. Did I get that right? No, Central West. Central West or Central High. I don't even know. I think it is Central. So I'm just making sure I can get the right school here. Big slate tomorrow, though. Big slate tomorrow. A lot of teams in the bye, especially in the track side of things. Just a couple of teams playing from the track. We will have one of them on our airwaves tomorrow. That is Clovis North taking on Frontier. Massive game in terms of everything, implication, playoff implication, all of that great stuff. I want to do a little stock up real quick on some high school teams as I go through the slate real quick. And then we'll go into a more deeper conversation with it tomorrow when Paul Metters comes on the show at 4 o'clock. So just want to touch on these few teams here in terms of it. But looking forward to seeing what Buchanan can do tomorrow against Paso Robles. Buchanan going to potentially get to a 5-0 start. Of course, I will say with a forfeit, it isn't a true 5-0, but 5-0 in the terms of the forfeit to Bakersfield High. That'll be what it is counting towards. You have a massive game tomorrow. Massive game between Bakersfield, Christian, Tulare, Union. I can't wait to see what happens in that one. That one has a lot of juice to it in terms of what it can determine, especially in the D2 potential side of things, where these two teams could lie in a playoff situation. Is Tulare Union the team that everyone needs to beat, or is Bakersfield Christian the team everybody needs to beat? It is razor thin, I would say, between these two teams in terms of caliber of play. Let's go over the resume real quick. Just real quick, for both teams, Bakersfield Christian 4-0, like I said, beating Faith Lutheran 28-21, a good team, a good program that is out of Las Vegas, eighth-ranked team in Vegas currently. Tehachapi, 49-7. Know that team can be certainly a beatable team. Christian CVC, down year for them. 42-3, still impressive on the road when Bakersfield Christian comes up there and plays them. Stockdale 47-0. That's what they're supposed to do against Stockdale. So Tulare Union is the biggest test for this Bakersfield Christian team. I anticipate it to be close because I think Tulare Union certainly has the strength to make this very close. If not, I think I would give them, if we had to be betting favorites, I would give them the betting favorite odds to win. Bigging St. Joseph in their first game on the road. St. Joseph's just been lights out on defense. Only Tulare Union able to score the amount of points they've been able to score against St. Joseph. LD, they had to beat LD. That's no big deal with how LD's been this season. Redwood, very fantastic game against Redwood. 49-42, back and forth. I saw how tough Redwood is with my own two eyes. That defense of Redwood is hard to score on. And so it was good to see Tulare Union do that. Handle business at Ridgeview. No sweat about it in terms of that. And so, hosting Bakersfield Christian before they get into league play, Union, man, they could be an undefeated team if it's all said and done, in terms of where that sits as a football game. Biggest hurdle of the season. Can't wait for it. You got Kalinga and Washington Union is a game I'm paying attention to as well. 3-1 versus 3-1. You also have St. Joe's at Shafter. Shafter's been 4-0 this season. Shafter just continues to hum along. The Generals at 4-0. Let's take a look at their schedule real quick. A win over Exeter, a big win over Arvin, big win over Dos Palos, who's been decent. Decent win over Edison. So St. Joseph's, we'll see. They've scored 40-plus points, Shafter has, in their first 40 in their first four games. So this will tell you a lot if the Shafter offense can keep it rolling up against St. Joe's. Outside of that, there's some other games. Liberty of Bakersfield, 0-5 at Independence. Can they finally get their first win? You've got Torres hosting Roosevelt. 4-0 Roosevelt, by the way. Just pay attention to them a little bit. The Rough Riders off to a decent start in their campaign, beating Corcoran, beating Atescadero, beating Fireball, beating Sanger West. Three of the four games have been, actually all games have been wins by double digits for Roosevelt. So I'm not scoffing at the idea that Roosevelt could be a team that could be making some noise in a lower division playoff bracket as far as that's concerned. Maybe even a league title there. Roosevelt-McLean might be an interesting game down the stretch. We'll see. All right, that's enough time on the scoreboard. Let's take a break. When we come back, we got another hour of show. We're going to talk some NFL. We're going to get you set for the big Thursday night game. Stay with us. Behind the Bench rolls along on 1430.
He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again. In anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
The 20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks, but super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, here on this Thursday, hour number two of our show here at Fashion Furniture. Just a little reminder, when two good friends get together to create the largest display of solid wood Amish furniture, well, nobody has it more, and nobody can save you more than Fashion Furniture at Lou Rodman's. No, it sounds crazy. Thanksgiving, Christmas. It is time to get ready. With complete dining room and bedroom sets, occasional tables, entertainment centers, the list of Amish home furnishings is endless. It's beautiful. And up to half off select floor samples. It's Amish Days USA. That's right. Amish Days USA. Say it with me. Amish Days USA. No tariffs. Get ready for the holiday season with your family. The combined collection of 24 Amish builders in 20,000 square feet of design from Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Indiana. It really is something to see. It's Amish Days USA with savings of up to 50% on floor samples, 0% financing, and 48-hour delivery from Fashion Furniture and Lou Rodman's. On El Paso, across from River Park, nothing like it in all of California. We are here live at Fashion Furniture. Good to be here. We are also served some Meenitz pizza, that's still sitting over there for you to enjoy, still hot and ready in terms of that. And if you're watching on the live stream, yes, yours truly is currently sitting in a nice recliner, the Alexander Power Recliner with power headrest and lumbar support. Feel like a king with the Alexander Leather Triple Power Recliner with Cloud Luxe Seating Memory Foam. Power lumbar, power headrest, power footrest, or all three together at the same time. You see me, I'm pulling up the power headrest right now to keep my head relaxed, but also up to watch the game or look at my computer right now. Matching sofa and love seat, the two colors in leather as well. So be sure to stop by, take a look at the offerings, and even for a big guy like me, this is a pretty decent one to be sitting in. So glad to be here. Hopefully our contraption is going to be able to sustain itself here as we go. Daniel, make sure we stay connected. Jorge, this thing can get finicky if we're there, and Jorge will shoot me a text if we mess up the whole operation. Regardless, we're here. We're good on it as well. Anyways, Daniel, if you want to talk, just turn up the dial on the clear dial on the right side for you. That should be yours. Just turn it up a little bit until you start seeing some green light for you there. Keep going. Keep going. Don't go too loud. There you go. Yeah, keep turning it. Keep turning it. There you go. Hello. Now you can hear yourself.
You can hear me.
There you go. So, anyways. All right. Let's talk a little NFL. We have a big game tonight. We'll dive into it at the end of this hour. We do have a guest coming up in this next hour as well. It is a driver from Madera. Robbie Keneally is going to hit us on the Lee's Air Hotline. But before we hit that, I asked three big questions for the Niners, Rams, and Raiders ahead of their games this Sunday. And Jorge, you can be a part of this conversation as well, of course. And I wonder if I'll get all of these answered. What did I start with there, Daniel, on my list? Did we start with the Rams?
Yeah.
The Rams.
Defense.
Can the turn yourself up just a little bit more there, Daniel, for you. There you go.
How am I now?
There you go. You're good now. Can the Rams defense hold off the Colts? I still think, according to what I heard, the Colts right now still haven't punted. Is that correct?
Let me look it up for you right now.
I think the Colts have still not punted this season in terms of it. Seeking their first 4-0 start since 09. Of course, everybody knows 09 as the year where the Saints and the Colts both started undefeated for quite some time, and then they went to the Super Bowl. The Saints ended up winning that Super Bowl.
So the Colts have only punted one time. So
one time. So Colts are vulnerable in terms of it. But it's going to be a very fascinating shootout opportunity between Stafford and Daniel Jones. Did not think I would be saying that in year 2025, but here we are. Jorge, Rams defense showed a little bit of flimsiness towards the tail end of facing the Eagles. They were up. They had the Eagles dead to rights. Could not hold it off. It was the third largest blown lead in the second half of a game in franchise history. Is there concern from your side that the Rams could struggle to stop the Colts on offense this Sunday?
Yeah, I think there is some concern there. And maybe not stop the Colts, but definitely going through the entire season, your defense is not as good as it was last year. A few guys left. I don't think those holes or the positions were filled in, but now I don't think they were filled in with the same, you know, type of caliber player that you had used to have. So that changes things, and I think that showed during the Eagles game.
Yeah, and what was particularly alarming was the pass defense. The run defense seemed to do all right, but it was the pass defense in what they needed that didn't quite yield for good results. The Rams co-lead the NFL this season with 12 sacks, by the way. Excuse me, the Rams. Did I say that? Rams with 12 sacks this season. Only them and the Broncos tied right now. The Colts offense has allowed 2 sacks this season, the fewest in the National Football League. So that battle is going to be fascinating, where it wins out, offensive line versus defensive line when it comes to it. Jonathan Taylor's been phenomenal this season. How about 338 rushing yards? That leads the National Football League and the most through 3 games by a Colts player since, you remember him, Alan Ameche in 1955.
Who?
So Alan Ameche with 410. Jonathan Taylor's been out of this world in terms of his start to the season. I think the question is, can the Colts sustain it? Will they get a week where it doesn't all quite go together and have the adversity that they have? It's going to be interesting to see. Daniel Jones, to my understanding, I don't think he has a single turnover this season. Yeah, he's the only player in the last 90 years with 3 passing, 3 rushing touchdowns, no turnovers in his first 3 games of the season. So it'll be interesting to see if midnight strikes for Cinderella in L.A. or if the Colts have more answers than questions on the defensive side. So question is, can the Rams keep up in the outscoring department? They certainly did. I mean, they jumped out 26 points right away, made it happen. I lean the idea that the Rams linebacking crew can shut it down a little bit in the running department. And I do think pass rush can beat out good offensive line more often than not, just because good offense. Let's evaluate what the Colts have faced the first 3 weeks, which is if they've had a record low 2 sacks, keep in mind the team the Rams are tied with in sacks is the Broncos. The Colts played the Broncos 2 weeks ago, and I don't know if they gave up a single sack to that Broncos team 2 weeks ago, if not. So maybe that's going to be cause for concern if we're going to go statistical analysis on it. So I like to believe pass rush can beat out the Colts offensive line, but maybe that'll be an issue for the Rams moving forward. So just wanted to ponder that question. I think that's my big question for the Rams game is defense versus Colts offense. I think the Rams offense is obviously still very good, and they put themselves in positions to win a football game. They put themselves in a field goal to win position to beat the Eagles. They did not execute in special teams. And I'm not panicking about the Rams. I think they are a phenomenal football team this year, and I think they can get the job done. It's just a matter of what their defense can do. So any thoughts there? Any other thoughts from you, Daniel, or you, Jorge, on the Rams side?
I'll let Jorge go first.
Jorge, anything to add there?
I just think the Rams, you know, they have a good team. I feel like there's certain things that could work well and certain things that could go bad. But overall, I feel like they're a decent team that might have the upper hand this weekend.
What about you, Daniel?
Well, I did look up the stat you were talking about. So the Broncos did not get a single sack on the Colts.
And if they still have 12 this season to lead the league. So you know how elite the Broncos pass rush can be.
Yeah, so I feel like it's definitely still going to be a struggle. But I feel like the Rams, I think they just go a bit differently on how they've approached their game. So I think we'll see something different this weekend.
Okay. My next question, we go to the Niners here real quick. Just a quick question on the Niners. Will the offense get back on track with Brock Purdy? Now, Mac Jones has been solid, but it hasn't been outstanding in terms of it. And, yes, he made an outstanding throw to Ricky Pearsall in a moment that he needed at 4th-and-2 on that big throw down the sideline. Purdy can maybe deliver you twice that many plays in a certain game for it. And the hope is that the offense doesn't become stagnant for a while under Brock Purdy. So will the Niners offense continue to show improvements against the Jacksonville team who is, for lack of a better term, opportunistic, a team that has the NFL-leading nine takeaways this season. They need two in this game to match the 1997 for mark that they had for the most through first four games of a season for the Jaguars. So the Jaguars have been ready to create turnovers in any sense of the word. And Jorge, does that concern you? Does it concern you how good the Jaguars are in terms of turning the ball over and how sometimes the Niners can have some maddening turnovers in some games when they do not need them? Mac Jones had an interception, I think, in the last game that turned into that. Do you get a little concerned at how good the Jaguars have been turning the football over and getting opportunities?
No, I don't think it concerns me. I mean, we definitely have to be aware of it. That's not something that the Niners could be like, you know, leaving behind or just not thinking about. But definitely be aware of it, and I think that the Niners, you know, their offense is good. I feel like if Purdy, you know, is the one on quarterbacking this weekend, then he should be bad. He should be. We shouldn't be too concerned about turnovers, but you know, always Daniel Jones, always it's a question mark in my book.
Daniel, what about you? When I throw the statistic out of takeaways, Jaguars getting the most takeaways in the National Football League, and the Niners, who are a team that hasn't been fantastic with protecting the football, would that concern you as a Niners fan if you were facing the Jaguars on Sunday?
I think maybe a little bit, but I also feel like a lot of these turnovers were under Mac Jones. So I feel like with Purdy, it would be a bit – I think he's a bit better at protecting the football, but I would still definitely be a little concerned especially with just how the Jaguars have been performing. But also, the Jaguars are still a bit mediocre in terms of, like, just winning. Because, I mean, yeah, they've won games, but you look at the teams they beat against.
Panthers, Bengals, and the Texans.
Yeah.
I still think there's mileage with the Texans. I still think they have a decent defense, so it's going to be interesting. Jaguars were able to withstand a pass rush like that. And by the way, the Niners are still looking to replace Nick Bosa in some form or fashion after he went down with his knee injury. My last question goes to the Raider game we have, which is coming up this Sunday as well. And my question about the Raiders is, can the Raiders run the damn ball? Can they actually get it done against the Bears team that has certainly not shown that they can stop many offenses, although the Cowboys seem to stop themselves in some form or fashion that last week in that performance. That's one I cannot explain. Bears have allowed a lot of passing touchdowns this year, 8 passing touchdowns, which is the NFL high mark right now. It's going to be interesting to see how the Raiders can go through it. 1.3 yards per rush. By the way, statistic that was just crazy to me, Ashton Gentry has 145 yards gained after contact. He currently has, I think, like 144 yards total on the year. So he is getting contacted behind the line a lot in terms of the run offense. And so the run offense of the Raiders has to figure it out. The offensive line has to have better points of attack, has to have better opportunities to make things happen for this team. The defense has had some issues in the run defense as well. So we'll see. I kind of throw my hands up and I say I don't know what to expect in this game because he's been some Jekyll and Hyde situations. So can the Raiders run the damn ball is my big question. Jorge, do you think the Raiders can run the damn ball against the Bears?
that's a big question, right? Because I feel like everybody was super hyped about Ashton Gentry at the beginning of the season. And all of a sudden, now they're all having questions about him. Does he protect? Does he not protect? Is he out there less plays than he should be? I don't know. There's a lot of things going on and a lot of things in his mind. I think that if he starts, you know, maybe not completing the runs or running wrong routes, I think it's time to put somebody else in there until he, you know, matures a little bit in the game and understands more about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Daniel, any last thoughts from you? Or?
Yeah, I think it's mainly just Carroll. I honestly think Carroll just needs to try his best to stop making Geno be a Russell Wilson type of player. Because I feel like he's trying to force Geno to, like, throw these moon balls at Russ would, but, like, he's not an old Russell Wilson. Even if you can get Gentry to run maybe, like, 6-7 yards, like, it would be a lot better than what they're doing right now.
Yeah, certainly. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we have a guest who's going to be on the Lee's Air Hotline here, Robbie Keneally, who will be racing this weekend. Madeira coming up next here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. And pleased to be talking about all big things that are happening in the Central Valley, including a very exciting night on Saturday at Madeira Speedway. That's the 52nd annual Harvest Classic at Madeira Speedway, a NASCAR-sanctioned ARSA West Series event as well. And we're excited to talk one of the drivers who are going to be there, a local guy, Robbie Keneally, now joins us from the Lee's Air Hotline. Robbie, how are we doing on this Thursday?
Man, we're doing great and excited to get to my home track here this weekend for another Arca Menards Series West race.
How long have you been having this date on this calendar circled for you?
I think it definitely gets circled from the start of the year for sure, just because this track has a lot of memories for me and it's special to me for sure.
So obviously very excited to have you come into town and race an event like this, an exciting one, 52nd annual. I'm sure you've been to a few others in the earlier part of the years. Where were your first memories of watching a race, the Harvest Classic? What were your first memories like?
My first memories go all the way back to when I was a kid, for sure. I started racing quarter midgets, which there's a little go-kart track right next to the big speedway there. And, you know, for many years, I can remember, you know, after racing my little go-kart, just watching over on the big track and definitely remembering that I wanted it to for sure be me one day. And dream has come true so far, for sure. So I've done one race there in an ARCA car before, so this will only be my second race in an ARCA car, but definitely a lot of memories and experience there and a lot of different types of cars in years past.
Yeah, what do you recall from that first race with the ARCA car, the first time you raced at Madera Speedway?
I didn't have too much luck. It was only like my second ever ARCA race before. I'd ended up qualifying somewhere around the top 10, which was pretty good, but I got in a pretty early wreck, which had taken me out for the rest of the race. But being with the new team that I'm with and the whole Jans Towing and Jans Racing crew, it's a really good team with really good race cars. And coming off a fresh win, I'm pretty confident and definitely excited for this one.
Yeah, fresh win, that's got to feel great. Is it a monkey off the back feeling? What is that like for you when you get that over the hump for you?
I think the first one is always the hardest, so everything after that feels a lot better. But I don't feel like it's much of a monkey off the back just because I don't think I was expecting it to come so soon. You know, winning an ARCA race is something that I've dreamed of ever doing my entire life, and for it to come in my rookie season is definitely a blessing, for sure. So anything after this is just kind of do the best we can for the rest of the year and then really hit it hard for hopefully a championship run next year.
Take me through that win. Is it about the prep of the week? What is it like now that you've compartmentalized and have seen a winning week for you and your team? What do you try to replicate from that?
I think it's just kind of do the same thing we've been doing all year. You know, my Jans Towing, Jans Racing crew, they're all really good and they all work really hard, just as well as us drivers. Actually, me and Kyle Keller right now are in L.A. just finishing up loading up the hauler, getting ready to head over there in the morning. So we're all really hardworking guys, and I think we just don't change that. It's just do our jobs in the shop, and when it comes to the racetrack, we do our job there, and whatever happens, happens.
Certainly. It's an exciting time. Obviously, you mentioned you're loading up from L.A., and you get to – you mentioned Kyle Keller as a guy who also from – it sounds like he's from the Madera area too. Is that correct?
We both moved there about 6 to 8 years ago. So yeah. We both lived in different areas before, but we've been living there for quite a while now.
So how did you get connected with him? And or you mentioned different areas of there, but the racing world, I got to imagine, it starts getting pretty small when it comes to where you guys are going and your levels. So how did you guys get connected?
Yeah, so me and Kyle have both been connected dating all the way back to, I think, 2020. So about 5 years now, and it's pretty cool that, you know, we've connected back to running for the same team with owner Jan Quackenbush this whole year. But it all starts with my first junior late model win was with Kyle and his dad. They both saw me after I had an issue with my car that wouldn't allow me to run the last two races of the year, and they both took a great chance on helping me out, and I ended up winning my first junior late model race, which again was at Madera Speedway. And from ever since then, we've kind of been connected there. I ran pro lates the next year, and he's always been someone who's been like a mentor with me. I mean, my first ARCA start and years that I did it in 2023 were a teammate to him, and to now be a teammate to him now is definitely something that is nice, because he's always been someone who's helped me and always been someone like a mentor to me.
Robbie, when you mentioned the opportunity he provides, or the opportunity that you got in that situation, do you feel like sometimes in racing like this, it's just about – being in the right place, right time, doing the things in the right time, and sometimes it's just an opportunity that you got to grab. Like, describe just trying to make it in a sport like this and trying to get your name known in a sport like this.
I think the way you said it pretty much sums it up. I could probably tell you about five different times that exact moment has happened for me, but really it matters the right place, the right time, and it matters, you know, the person you are, as long as, you know, you work hard on and off the track and you're respectful about it. You know, being in the right place at the right time comes maybe a little more natural. But the way you put it is definitely one of the best ways to put it, because I could probably, you know, just off the top of my head, think three to five times that that exact moment has happened of being in the right place at the right time.
Name me a moment where you felt like it was the longest odds to have it happen, but then it just somehow happened. Of the three to five times you said, what was like, wow, I can't believe that happened for me?
I think it just goes back to maybe this last weekend winning, and goes back to being partnered up with Jan Quackenbush in the first place. I was originally helping out Kyle Keller, my teammate now. I was just crewing for him. I wasn't racing. I basically took the whole entire year of 2024 off as a race car driver, and I was just helping and crewing for different people and different teams. And one of the people was Kyle Keller, and we ended up running Kern and Phoenix to end the year out with Jan Quackenbush. And once again, my plans for this year had kind of been crewing, but Jan, you know, he took a chance and saw how hard of a worker I was off the track, and he ended up being able to experience my abilities on the track, and we've been together ever since.
Is there a real thing about momentum coming off a win? Like, do you feel race momentum after a win like that? We hear it all the time from athletes of, like, sometimes you just get in a zone when you feel it. Are you feeling that in racing? And describe that for me.
I think after this weekend, we'll kind of fully tell that. But I think the good thing is that we come to another racetrack that's a lot similar to Roseville. So, as a race car driver, you feel pretty good about winning, you know, the last track, and you're coming to this track 2 weeks later. That's very similar to it. So I think momentum is definitely a thing that works in all sports.
Robbie Keneally here on the Lee's Air Hotline on 1430 ESPN, racing in the 52nd annual Harvest Classic. You mentioned, and maybe it's kind of like golf where you go to a different course and every place has a little bit of a different character to it. This racetrack, you mentioned a little similar to Roseville, but what are the quirks? What are the things you, I don't know if you can give away the whole strategy, but what are the quirks of this racetrack that you know?
I think one of the greatest things about this track that makes it so raceable is it's multi-groove for sure. You know, there's nights where the bottom is dominant and there's been nights that the top is dominant. So we'll see a lot of two wide, two groove racing. That's always been one of the most unique things about Madera for sure.
For the people who are out there, when you go too wide on a racetrack like that, the thrill certainly of it can excite the fans, but I'm sure in the car itself, that's got to feel pretty energetic as well. When you have something like that, describe it for me in terms of just what that feeling is like when you go too wide.
I think all the different sort of emotions run in when you're running, you know, side by side with somebody. It's pressure, the adrenaline, just trying side by side, you know, you're getting pressured from another competitor trying to take your spot, or you're pressuring another competitor trying to take the spot. So being side by side is definitely not a moment where you're calm.
And racing, and there's emotions, and you're just trying to get ahead of the other guys, but there's the battle of it. Take me through the mindset of it. Sometimes when you're going, and do you pay attention to the specific driver that's next to you, and you have a knowledge of them, or do you just kind of say, I see a car next to me, and I'm just trying to pass them?
I think in a perfect world, everybody's going to say that, you know, you see a car and you're trying to pass them, but I think more in reality that everybody knows sort of what racer they're racing and the strengths or weaknesses of them, and you try and use that against them to be able to make the pass.
Certainly. It's an exciting sport for sure, and I know a lot of people are going to be excited about coming up on Saturday at Madera Speedway. I see in your bio, you've been racing since 4 years old. Is it a racing family that you were born into? How do you get involved at 4 years old, getting going there in your racing career?
I've been a little more unique. I mean, I feel like most people nowadays is born into like a full racing family. But when I was four, the only people who had raced are on my dad's side, and there were some cousins of mine. So that was ended up how I got into it. It certainly wasn't a full racing family, but I think now we're definitely considered a racing family for sure.
Was your mom like, oh god, he's going out with the racing cousins again? I'm a little, you know, what were those conversations like? Hey, can I go out with them and spin around on the track a little bit? Like, how was it convincing the parents? I'm sure dad didn't take too much convincing, but maybe mom a little bit. How were those conversations?
Well, I think dad was definitely the one who started it all for sure. You know, being involved with that, and then bringing up the ideas of it. And I think it definitely took mom probably a little more convincing to start for sure, as she was nervous. And I think she's always nervous when we're all out there, but she's very passionate about it, as our whole family is.
Yeah, certainly. But it's going to be a family affair. I got to imagine, how many tickets do you have segmented out for this Saturday for the race, for the fam and the people who are going to be there in Madera?
I'm not sure. My mom's probably the best at that. She takes care of, you know, a lot of the stuff off the track, and I try and focus myself more on getting the cars ready and preparing for the race. But I'm sure that a lot of our family and friends will be in the stands for this weekend.
Do you leave a lot of that until post-race with meeting everybody and saying hi to everybody? Do you leave that more for the post-race when you wrap up with everything?
Yeah, I think throughout the day there's just so much going on and so much that you have to prepare for and focus on. So throughout the day, the only people I'm seeing are people really a part of the team. And, you know, after the race is really where we get the chance to meet up with everybody.
Certainly. There'll be a lot of excitement on Saturday night for sure. Robbie, you're just 19-year-old, man. You got a lot of career in front of you. Are you excited about the path you're on, and describe it for me in terms of, you know, what your progression is and what you're most excited about as you're continuing your early part of your career here?
Yeah, I think to start, like you said, that there's been, you know, a lot of different moments and a lot of different people who have helped me propel to this moment. But I think the moment I'm in now is the more excited I've ever been in my entire life, knowing Jan Quackenbush and how much he supported me and the opportunity that he's given me, as long as the entire crew and race team. You know, we get to drive the opportunity of having really fast race cars every single race and to run up front. And, you know, something that I didn't know if I'd ever be able to accomplish in my life, already accomplishing in my rookie year, is a dream come true already for sure. So I'm really excited to continue on this partnership with Jan and the entire crew, and you know, the sky's the limit.
Last couple questions here, and then I'll let you go. Do you think about in the race? Do you think about like some of the kids that are there now, the young kind of Robbie Keneally types that are there? That you do you think about that a little bit when you're racing, or when you think about some of the kids that are there that could get influenced by the way you race in this one on Saturday?
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the biggest things is for racers our age and, you know, above us in generations, is you always try to be the best role model you can be for the younger generations below you, because you remember that at one point was you, you know. So I think one of the most fun parts is seeing all the kids who I remember used to be like me, and know that hopefully one day they can have the same opportunity that I have.
All right. Well, it'll be exciting, obviously, this Saturday. Tell us why, maybe even for the non-race fans that are out there listening right now, maybe getting introduced into the race and sport. Why should people come out Saturday night for the Harvest Classic at Madera Speedway?
I think the people who have never been are the people who should come the most, you know, because like they say, people who come to races, they never stop coming after that. It's a It's a thrill like no other, and if you've never done it, you definitely got to go check it out.
Perfect weekend to come, too. No Fresno State game. Nobody's got anything better than to go down to the Madera Speedway this Saturday. Exciting one. 52nd annual Harvest Classic. The Madera 150, they like to call it as well. So, hey, Robbie, appreciate it. Safe travels up here, and best of luck on Saturday.
Thank you guys for having me. Like I said, thank you, Jan Quackenbush, and the whole Jan's Racing team for helping me get this car prepared, and hopefully we can go repeat what we did at Roseville. Definitely excited to come to Madera, my home track, once again.
Back-to-back wins would be pretty sweet. Robbie Canelia here on 1430 ESPN. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we wrap up the show next. We'll be right back on 1430. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Wrapping up our show, taking you to the end of this hour, which will get us to Thursday night football. A little reminder of the schedule here on our airwaves for the rest of the week. Let's get to it. A's and Astros already wrapped up over on 790. I believe that was an 11-1 final. Astros win 11-5. Wow, the A's actually had a little bit of a decent fight there. So Astros stay within the wild card race, at least for now. But they are not getting good news, as the Tigers are currently winning 4-1 there as well in the top of the fifth. Seahawks Cardinals coming up tonight, 5 o'clock, like I said, 5:15 kickoff from Arizona. I believe they're doing the rivalry thing, the uniforms with the rivalry colors. Daniel, do you know what I'm talking about there?
I don't know if they're doing it tonight. Let me check.
I think it might be tonight. I saw the desert colored Arizona Cardinals jersey and helmet.
Oh yeah, because their profile picture is also that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the first of those. I don't even know what they're called.
Oh, they're even doing special end zones and stuff.
Yeah, it's all crazy. It's all going to be crazy tonight. So don't adjust your television. Yes, it is going to be kind of strange. You're not going to know who you're watching. Jorge, are you in or out on the rivalry? I don't even know what they call it, but the rivalry uniforms. It's the first look we get tonight for them on the season.
Which was it, the rivalry uniforms?
Seahawks are wearing like a, I don't know what they're wearing, like a blue, I know Arizona's wearing like the sand dusted like colored Arizona Cardinals jersey and helmet. Almost kind of looks like army sand, like camo in a sense, but I don't even know if I can describe it right. But
they don't have anything up, so I'm not sure.
I don't know, maybe we'll see. But that's what the Cardinals have tonight. So are you a fan of it, Jorge?
Yeah. Well, for some of them I am, but other ones are, yeah, we saw them the other day, and you know, I like the Niners one, that one was cool. But there's others that are like, okay, well, I don't know.
I'm out on the Patriots one. I know that for a fact. Patriots one. I'm like, and we're going to be wearing it, I think, tomorrow, next week when we play the Bills on Sunday Night Football. Can't wait for that. Woo!
Are the Bills wearing theirs?
Yeah, they will. They wear their white. I think they're going to wear their like all white, like frosted ones or whatever they
Miami's
are.
Miami's okay looking.
Yeah, Miami's kind of stinks. The black? Eh. That's tired. That feels like 10 years ago. I'm not even going to give credit to the Jets for theirs. I think the Bills is the cleanest.
Oh, I see Arizona's. Yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah. I don't think. Yeah, well.
I think Arizona's would be better without the specs.
I think it's they're trying to go to the desert sand thing. It's different. It's certainly different. We'll see what it plays like on TV. Tomorrow we will have Sportsline Building Hour with Tony D 2 to 3. We'll have my show from 3 to 5, 2-hour shows, take you to 5 o'clock. Then yours truly will zip on over to La Monica for Clovis North and Frontier. That's right. We got another Friday Night Lights coming at you there on Friday, 7 p.m. Pregame, 7:30 kickoff between Clovis North and Frontier. Over on 790, we'll have some baseball. A's and Royals will do battle there. A's and Royals, 6:30 pregame, 7:05 first pitch between those two teams. Saturday, we'll have Central Valley Sports Report with Paul Betters from 10 a.m. to noon. at 12:30, Giants and Rockies. This is your last Giants broadcast on the radio this season. Going out with style, 12:35 pregame with a 105 first pitch. A's and Royals will be over in 790. That is your last A's broadcast of the season. That is at 6:30 with a 705 first pitch there as well. On Sunday, we will have a couple of games. Niners and Jaguars will be at 12 o'clock pregame with a 105 kickoff between them over on 1430. Following them will be Green Bay and Dallas in Dallas for the Packers and the Cowboys. That's your 1430 NFL doubleheader. Over on 790, over on 790, just one NFL game, Rams and Colts from L.A., 12 p.m. pregame, 105 kickoff, I think it is. It's a 105 kickoff as well. So Rams and Colts from SoFi Stadium on 790. And then we'll be back Monday with another Sportsline Bulldog Hour, Tony D, 2 to 3. We'll have my show from 3 to 5. And take you up to Bengals at Broncos for Monday Night Football. Major wager over there at Me and Ed's Victory Grill. And then Tuesday, TBD on the shows as we have the MLB Wild Card Round playing on 1430. TBD on games that will affect us here on the radio. So that's what you got. That is what you got. All right, let's do the Daily Spread brought to you by Chuchansky Gold Resort and Casino. The Daily Spread. If you're not trying your luck with your football teams, try your luck with going to Chuchansky Gold Resort and Casino. Fantastic place to enjoy even some football games. I know they watch some football games up there. Wonderful food and restaurants up there as well. Seahawks, a minus .5 favorite over the Arizona Cardinals on the road. Cardinals, a home dog on a Thursday in the division. I always smell trouble anytime a home dog exists in the division. Feels like it could. A lot of people are on Seattle tonight. I understand reasons why. Seattle's defense has played phenomenally. Outside of the other side of things, Seattle offense, obviously with JSN, making things happen. Arizona hasn't been lighting the world on fire, but they have found ways to get into winning positions. Where do we stand on this Seahawks-Cardinals game? I'll start, and then we can go to Jorge and we can go to Daniel. To me, I think I have to pay attention to the volatility of what the Seahawks defense has been able to provide statistically from it. I'm taking a look at some team defense statistics. Seattle 14th overall in the NFL, as opposed to Arizona's 25th overall ranked defense in terms of it. Their 25th ranked offense. I think the Seattle defense in the run game, 7th best in the National Football League. Cardinals are going to have to obviously patchwork some things with James Conner being out for the rest of the year. So the run attack that is Arizona's supposed strength on offense will be diminished considerably. So that'll be interesting. Seattle can't run the ball very well so far this year. They're bottom 10 in it. And Arizona, a top 5 rush defense in the National Football League so far this season, but they're horrible at passing, stopping the pass. So paying attention to this game in terms of that, I think the recipe tells me Seattle has it in terms of what we can statistically look at it. I think the loss of James Conner is too much. I'm going to pick Seattle tonight to win over Arizona based off their statistics. Jorge, how do you feel about tonight's game, Seattle and Arizona?
Yeah, like you say, Seattle has a hard time running the ball, but they do have a better quarterback, I feel. I think that if the Cardinals are able to, you know, come back and run the ball on them on the Seahawks, because, you know, they lost a running back, their number one running back anyways.
James Conner out.
Yeah, out for the season. Since if they could run it, they'll have a better time of actually, you know, defeating the Seahawks.
Certainly. Daniel, where are you at on this game tonight?
I think I'm on the Seahawks. I mean, just because, to be honest, Cardinals are 2-1, but it's kind of like a deceptive 2-1 considering they played both the Saints and the Panthers the first 2 weeks. And, like, their one loss is to the Niners, who I still think are a pretty good team despite all the injury woes. And, like, I think we will see Kyler Murray running the ball a lot more tonight, considering there's no set running back one no more.
Trey Benson is the guy. Has he been a guy before? I don't know if he's ever been a guy before.
I've never even heard of him, to be honest.
And he's been in this backfield a couple of years, so maybe he's a guy just waiting for his opportunity. You never know.
Yeah.
In a game like this, I worry about a guy just showing up. Mm-hmm. And Trey Benson can be a guy who can just show up in a football game like this. And then you sit there and be like, wow, he had 160 tonight. And we weren't quite sure what that was going to look like. And Seattle, like I said, isn't great against the run in terms of it. They're fantastic at other departments. Like I said, I just wanted to point out the stats again because I was just pulling it up between both teams. But it's going to be interesting to see where these two teams go out. Sorry, I misspoke. Seattle, great at the run. They're not great at the pass defense. But outside of that, I do think it's going to be a field goal game. I think Seattle will win by a field goal. It'll be closer than people think tonight. They'll have the desert stuff going on. Arizona back at home after being on a tough road game. They really should have beat that Niners team. They really should have.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to, like, discredit it because I don't think the Niners played down to the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals played up to the Niners. Yeah. So I'm going to give them a little credit here. This is going to be a really close game tonight. It's going to be a really fun game tonight, I think. So I look forward to it.
All I have to say is that if they're available and you haven't picked them up, pick up either the Seahawks, the Cardinals special teams tonight.
Really?
Yep.
You saying low scoring game tonight?
Yeah.
Super low scoring?
Not super low scoring, but I'm thinking maybe like a 12-15 or something like that.
Wow, something like that. Or you think it's going to be low scoring tonight?
Yeah, I think it's going to be more of a run game. If they're able to, like I said, if they're able to get the running going, the Cardinals are going to have a better time of scoring. But, yeah, it's definitely going to be a low-scoring game.
Well, that is your daily spread brought to you by Trichancy Gold Resort and Casino. Like I said, try your luck there at a fantastic resort and casino here in the Central Valley. All right, one more MLB score check real quick before we go. White Sox and Yankees tied at 1 right now. Red Sox and the Blue Jays in the bottom of the third. I believe the Blue Jays have the bases loaded. Still no score.
They do, but the two outs.
Yeah. Tigers are up 4-1 over the Guardians right now in the middle of the fifth inning. Mets have jumped to a 2-0 lead over the Cubs. So Mets just need to win a few more games, and they're in the wild card. They'd be playing the Dodgers.
And Jays just blew their bases loaded chance.
Yeah, there you go. Fantastic. Fantastic. Good for you, apparently.
Yep.
I hate it.
One time I'm a Red Sox fan.
One time you're a Red Sox fan. I hate it. I can't believe we're in this situation. All right. Good job by you guys. Appreciate it. Good job by you, Jorge.
Thank you, guys. Show.
We'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Thursday Night Football next on 1430.